This is a replay of the Wednesday night, August 21st, WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings, unless sports preempt us. That's from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoip. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoip. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We've got 3 hours to spend together, and in the first hour, I am delighted to be joined by Steve Probst. A big apology. He was slated for last week, and somehow I forgot it. And I guarantee you, nothing I was saying was more important than this. I was just leafing through those old-school records, 1,000 selected R&B, rock and roll, and soul 45 RPM singles, and we'll talk about that. That's his latest work, but you know, there's 10. And if you were listening a couple weeks ago, it was Steve's What Was the First Rock and Roll Record that he wrote with Jim Dawson. That was an argument settler as far as I'm concerned, but there are 50 from which to choose. We'll talk about that too. But right now, Steve, again, apologies and welcome back to WGN Radio.
Well, thank you. No time like the present, as they say.
Yes, exactly. Now, I'm not sure, but speak to me a minute because I'm not sure about the quality of this phone call.
Okay, well, do you want me to... Okay, hold on.
Okay. Yeah, I was not 100% sure about that, but we will.
How's that? Is that a little better?
That is absolutely better. Okay.
Okay.
So as go ahead.
Quit using my old dial phone.
Yeah, nothing like them. Nothing like them. All right,
okay.
So now, as I was saying a few weeks ago, I pointed to what was the first rock and roll record when somebody asked me just that question. And, of course, you have 50 wonderful contenders of this, so it's obviously not clear-cut, though personally, for a lot of reasons, I go with G by the Crows, which is in there. But you never said in the book that I recall what your number one choice would be if we had to put you against the wall and say, pick one.
Okay, sort of by coincidence, I was invited by the Library of Congress to contribute an article about a record that I consider to be very important. So I wrote an essay on that particular record. A lot of information I gleaned from two people, Ike Turner and Joe Bihari. How's that for a...
Well, yes.
A lineup.
Clearly, the Bihari brothers were legends, and of course, Ike publicly known for all of his misdeeds, but what a hell of a writer and performer.
Yeah. No, that I'll save the suspense. The record I wrote about was Rocket 88 by
Jackie Brinson. Yeah.
Although Ike Turner should have gotten artist credit, somehow Chess Records decided that the vocalist deserved the credit. So there you go.
Okay. All right.
That's the record that I'd recommend. And if you want to check the Library of Congress website, there's an article written by, guess who? Me.
That's great.
On that very site. Well, thank you.
That's wonderful. Yeah, well, and a big thank you because, you know, so many of these songs will disappear when we do. And it's only works like yours that keep some of them alive. Oh, yeah, there are ones that will last forever because of a lot of reasons. But most of them, they're going to vanish when we do. So to have books like yours, it preserves something forever.
Well, I hope so. And I guess that's probably the case.
Yeah.
And I think it's a task. Worth the trouble. You know what I mean?
Well, it is. And the nice thing about it is that you started doing this when the bulk of the artists were still alive. And,
right.
You know, that makes it really special. Years ago, I did market profiles for radio markets, and I was lazy. I only did 11, and this was the mid-80s. And to this day, I say to John, my greatest regret in life is that I didn't do them all when everybody was still alive, because it's too late now.
Yeah, well, hey, you You do what you can. There's a story related to that. I first went on the air in late 1981 at KLON out of Cal State Long Beach, and it was about 3 or 4 months later, without warning, in the parking lot as I arrived for my Sunday morning show, up pull 4 black Cadillacs. In these 4 black Cadillacs, out pops Vernon Green, Chuck Higgins. This is without warning. I had no idea these guys are going to be there.
Wow.
Vernon Green, Chuck Higgins, Brenton Wood, and Don Julian, and a couple of their associates. And Don Julian engineered this whole thing. Of course, it would have been nice if he had told me. Then I could have brought in some of their records to, so the interview would make a little bit of sense. But just imagine.
Oh, wow.
Those guys are no longer... out there doing their thing.
Brenton's still alive, isn't he?
Well, yeah. Okay, Brenton's still alive.
Yeah.
I was lucky to interview him several times. But Chuck, Vernon, and Don.
All gone. Forget it. All gone. And that is just classic. And I'll bet that's one of those shows you wish would have lasted for hours and hours.
Yeah. Well, I think 3 hours was enough. I was exhausted.
Oh, I'm sure you were, but, you know, with talent like that and so many wonderful L.A. stories, I just couldn't get enough of that. So that's great. Now, do you have a recording of that anywhere?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, good.
I have a recording of that show.
You should put it online.
I should do something with it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I'd like to hear it first. I was... just getting used to being on air, so it probably wasn't my most professional-sounding moment.
It would have been fine. It would have been fine, because what we would have heard from them would have been just great. Now, those old-school records, 1,000 selected R&B, rock and roll and soul, 45 RPM singles, 46 to 87. Okay, you did the selecting. What caused a record to make the cut?
Just me thinking that record would be of interest, and oftentimes it's because I had an interview or some sort of interesting knowledge about that record. But not all records, you know, some off-the-wall records, a lot of well-known records. It was just arbitrary choices, you know, records I thought were the most influential. It wasn't, but it wasn't all hits, but there were a lot of hits in there. So there was no scientific process or artistic evaluation. Yeah. It was just records I thought would be of, I guess, greatest interest to the most people. There's a couple of records I wish I had put in there. I can name 3 of them.
What are they?
You had to ask.
Of course.
Of course. Saturday Night Fish Fry by Louis Jordan.
Yeah.
I had a great story about that because that wasn't the original of that song. It was originally by Floyd Dixon with the Eddie Williams group.
I
had Floyd talking about it, and I could have easily added it, and I don't know why. You know, it was a collapse. Not Fade Away by Buddy Holly.
Okay.
And I was taken to task on that. Okay. Fair enough, and a whole lot of shaking going on.
Okay.
That's a record of great interest because that was originally by Big Maybelle, and then there was a country version by, who was it, Roy Hall, and then finally Jerry Lee Lewis picked up on it and made raved it up a whole bunch and, rocked it out. It was Big Maybelle on her version... took a phrase from an Eddie Arnold song that had been a hit about beating on that old ding dong.
Okay.
Can I say that on the radio?
Yes, of course.
So she actually referred to an Eddie Arnold record in her original version of A Whole Lot of Shaking Going On.
Well, that's a great story. Now, there are three very worthwhile choices, but I got to tell you, I mourn the fact that Saturday Night Fish Fry wasn't in there, so we're going to talk about that. I'm talking to Steve Propes, and it's P-R-O-P-E-S. You can go to Amazon.com, and I'd say absolutely pick up these books, as many as you can. Those old school records, 1,000 selected R&B, rock and roll, and soul 45 RPM, 1946 to 87. And we were just talking about Jackie Brenston's Rocket 88, and that, of course, is in the book, page 10. But on page 11, we get to Peppermint Harris, and we're going to talk about him, too, coming up on WGN Radio. And we're talking about those old-school records, and, you know, for many of us, the first time we heard a lot of these was on good old AM radio, usually late at night through distant signals, and it was just Nirvana. And there were so many great radios back in the days, too, those Zenith Royal 275s and things like that. Well, and then, of course, after a while, that was it for good quality reception when it came to radios. And Bob Crane was just as upset about it as the rest of us were, and he decided to do something about it. And boy, did he. Every radio that Bob Crane has designed has one thing in common: terrific AM and FM reception, just like the days of yesteryear. And on top of that, there's so many different things from which to choose that have additional features. One of them is the CC Skywave SSB2, and it is a gem. It's a great travel radio because you get the aviation band and a lot more. You get, 400 presets? Yeah, and it's all digital. It's got a dial, a light, and an alarm, and a timer, and a clock, and all those things, which you would expect. But you wouldn't expect how good the reception is, and you wouldn't expect the aviation band. You also get single sideband, which can be a real gem, plus NOAA weather and NOAA alert. It is just a terrific radio to get things that, well, your smartphone won't get them, that's for sure. And you can check it out. Go to ccradio.com anytime, ccradio.com. Read about the CC Skywave SSB2, the newest edition of C. Crane CC Skywave line, and it's just wonderful. It weighs only 8 ounces. It fits in the palm of your hand, and like I say, it is just a supreme travel radio. Now, if you can't go online for some reason, you can call them. They've got the best customer service in the world. 800-522-8863. 800-522-TUNE. Yes, you'll get a real person who will answer all your questions, and you can order by phone if you want. If you want a catalog, they'll mail you one free of charge, put it in the mail to you the next day. So it's just terrific. But if you can go online, not only great products, but great information about radio too. So that's ccradio.com. Look at the CC Skywave SSB2. You tell them Raleigh sent you from WGN Radio.
You took my love and gave it, done me wrong. Still was satisfied. Still like my name all the time. So send a shame the way you lied, but it's all right.
It's all right.
Any way you do,
it's alright.
I can't tell you how bad I feel. Wait until it happens to you. I meet my friends, I try to wear a smile, try to hold my head up high. You know, sometimes it just gets so bad, I have to steal away and cry. But it's alright.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and that is Peppermint Harris, and Wait Until It Happens to You, 1967 on Jewel. Yeah, Stan's Music Shop in Shreveport, Louisiana, mail order supreme. Of course, I mail ordered it, and at the time, I never even put it together with It's the Same Peppermint Harris, like there are two, but I don't know why I didn't put it together, with I Got Loaded, which was number one on Aladdin in 1951, and it is in those old school records. So my first question to Steve Propes is, what happened to him between 1951 and 67?
Well, he did have some recordings, but I wouldn't call him exactly a super active performer during that era. Now, I Got Loaded in the 1970s. Believe it or not, I used to frequent a couple of bars, one in Sunset Beach. God, I forget the name of it. But I Got Loaded was still on the jukebox, and it was also a big jukebox record in taverns in Avalon on Catalina Island.
Oh, yeah.
So those are both sort of historic drinking spots. And what's more appropriate than I Got Loaded by Peppermint Harris And Latin Records put out some other records by him, and none of them really hit. So he might have gotten a little bit discouraged. That's all I can say. I didn't really have a chance to hobnob with anybody associated with him, or I would have loved to have heard that story myself. He was on Jewel Records.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, let me see what I can pull up here in my... I got a database in my collection, believe it or not.
Oh, wow, okay. How nice.
And I'll keep asking me questions, and I'll come up with what I
have.
Very
good. We can certainly do that. And, of course, the flip side of that was It's You, Yes, It's You, and you'd hear that occasionally on the jukeboxes. But like I say, other than that, I didn't know. Now, it was covered the same year by Earl Bostick, and then the one that surprised me in 56 was the Cadets. So.
Yeah, that's right. I got loaded by... That was one of their many cover versions.
Yeah.
I mean, they actually covered Heartbreak Hotel.
Right.
like we're gonna embarrass Elvis Presley, and we're gonna have the number one hit out of Heartbreak Hotel. I think Heartbreak Hotel was. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, I heard a click. Mm-mm. I think somebody's listening in.
Just the CIA.
It has to do with Lester Beharie, the sort of black sheep of the Beharie family, who was relegated to Memphis and ran Media Records. He never got along with the other Beharie brothers, and I think he had something to do with Elvis. Maybe he tried to get Elvis to record on Meteor. I'm not quite sure. I've heard stories about that, but I think there's a connection between him and Elvis and the Cadets recording Heartbreak Hotel. But we were talking about I Got Loaded. Yeah, Earl Bostick, who was it? Terrell. Here we go.
Terrell, the one I'm thinking of is Ty Terrell, who was with the Robins, but that's the only
Terrell
I can think of first. But Lester was the oldest Beharie, too.
There was a vocalist on the Earl Bostick I Got Loaded, but I can't think of
who
it was.
Yes, there was. Oh, damn. Well, it'll come to both of us, no doubt. But yeah, like I say, Les was the oldest of the Beharie brothers, and I wondered how he got relegated to Memphis, but he did quite a lot there.
Oh yeah, he was put out a lot of rockabilly, and he had Little Milton for a while.
Right.
He had Rufus
right.
Thomas for a while, so he had some of the big stars out of the Memphis scene, and I think Media Records is mostly famous for rockabilly sides.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
But get it, Sun, Meteor.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was so much going on, and of course, just like before, Sex, Satellite, which was mostly country, but nonetheless,
Satellite. There's another.
Yeah, exactly.
Things in the sky.
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
So there you have it.
You got it solved.
All right. Well, we're talking to Steve Propes. If you want to call, if you've got questions, sometimes you call and ask me stuff, and I don't know. Well, Steve does. So 888-876-5593. 8888 ROLLYE on WGN Radio.
In every beat of my heart, there's a beat for you. Conversations, you're my inspiration. Everything I do, I'll do for you. There's a boat.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Well, that's the original, Every Beat of My Heart, on Federal, 1952, by the Royals. You know him better as Hank Ballard and the Midnighters, but there's quite a story there, and it is in those old school records, 1,000 selected R&B, rock and roll, and soul 45 RPM singles. And Steve Probst wrote it. Steve Probst joins me. So if you got any questions, this is the guy to ask. 888-876-5593. 8888 Raleigh. And so, Steve, there is quite the story of Every Beat of My Heart.
Before we get to that, though, I found another version of I Got Loaded that might interest you, and that is none other than Johnny Flamingo. I do not have the record. I've never heard his...
Yes.
One of Huggy Boy's bright ideas. So we'll have Johnny Flamingo record I Got Loaded.
Yes.
He put it on... Canton Records, not Canton, as right. in China, but Canton. He corrected me on that because he came from Canton, Ohio. Right. So that solves that problem. And he had Caddy Records because he was told he'd get enough money to buy a caddy with that label. But I think he took it all to the racetrack.
Well,
anyway,
guaranteed. But, you know, as we're talking about this, I miss Huggy Boy. He was absolutely an original.
He called me up. I was out of town. Sylvia took the call, and he wanted me to. He was going to buy some time on what was that station? Was it KGIL?
Yes. Well, they were also the people, the Beatons, who controlled that 1090 Express where he was.
Well, he was going to do a midnight show, and he wanted to have me co-DJ it with, which would have just been like a mind blower for me.
Yeah.
But by the time I got back from wherever I was, he was in the hospital because he had suffered some injuries in a fall, and that was just about the end of it. Anyway, yeah, I miss him tremendously. Every Beat of My Heart,
yes.
The Royals.
Yes.
Johnny Otis wrote it.
Right.
He was sent to Detroit to conduct by Sid Nathan of King Records, King Federal.
Right.
He was sent to Detroit to conduct a audition a bunch of group singers.
Right.
And he auditioned Little Willie John. Dig this lineup: Little Willie John, Jackie Wilson, and the Royals. And I think he wrote Every Beat of My Heart because Jackie Wilson sang some pop big band song, and Johnny Otis knew that he would not make it with that kind of material, so he wanted Jackie Wilson to sing a more hip, up-to-date modern song, so he wrote Every Beat of My Heart for that purpose, and Sid Nathan still turned down Jackie Wilson. He okayed Little Willie John. So Johnny gave it to the Royals. It was their very first record. The flip side, called All Night Long, Wynonna Harris sings a part of it. So that's a little bit of Royals, Midnighters. This is before Hank Ballard joined the group, type of history.
That's interesting. I thought that Hank Ballard had been there. I thought that he came right before it. So it was after.
No, he replaced somebody. The first record you can really hear him on is Get It by the Royals.
Okay.
Then they recorded Work With Me Annie. He had to change their name to Midnighters because King Records signed the Five Royals, and they were spending all their time, the Royals and the Five Royals, taking other people's bookings, pretending to be the other group, so there was a lot of competition between them.
Well, what I loved,
so King,
I was going to say, what I loved about the Five Royals is there were actually six of them.
That's true. But it's better to have six, because if one gets sick, you at least have five.
That's
That was explained to me by somebody. I think Marvin Spencer, otherwise known as Sheridan Spencer, shared that with me. Okay, or maybe it was Al Frazier. Oh, man, I'll tell you. The people, you know, I mean, like you say, They ain't around no more.
No, they're not. They were independent businessmen who, you know, never had to go to a stockholder meeting. And, you know, there was not much money on the line for any of this. And they could do whatever they wanted. Now, Sid Nathan, of course, there's a character in and of itself. But,
oh, yeah.
Not surprising to me that he would say, I'm Nixon, Little Willie John, I'm Nixon, Jackie Wilson, and all this. Because at the time, he was making money with groups. So he probably wanted another group.
Well, yeah, but of course, Jackie Wilson did appear on his label after he replaced Clyde McFadder in the Dominoes after Clyde formed the Drifters. So probably Sid Nathan didn't know it was Jackie Wilson that replaced Clyde.
Exactly. I wouldn't have cared, you know, as far as he was concerned. It's the Dominoes. Yeah, oh, that's just terrific. Now, you've interviewed so many of these people, and also for the people that you didn't interview, you've done so much research. And so I want to know, what are some of the really strange things you uncovered?
Oh, strange things. Wow. Well, okay, this might not seem that strange, but Phil Spector he was assigned to record a group on the song called Puddin' and Tane. So he took the what were they calling themselves at the time? They later became the Untouchables. Just before they were the Untouchables, I think he gave them the name the Alley Cats, and they recorded Puddin' and Tane. But was it the songwriter or the publisher decided he wanted to have two different groups record the same song and test market the record, send out both versions of the record and see which one caught on. Mm-hmm. So he had Phil produce Puddin' and Tane, and then he had another group called the Splendors also record Puddin' and Tane. Well, the Splendors weren't that splendid in terms of sales, and the Alley Cats, their version produced by Phil Spector, not surprisingly, hit the charts and was an okay hit. Of course, the Alley Cats never recorded under that name again. That was definitely a one-shot deal that was a great record, and they went on to...
Well, of course, Bobby Sheen was in the Alley Cats.
Bobby Sheen sang the high part on that. He was not a regular member. That was, what was his name?
Well, you had mentioned Sheridan Spencer, of course. And
Sheridan Spencer.
Right. Gary Pipkin was in that, I think.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah,
that's one of several stories.
Yeah.
But,
well, there's another way to ask a similar question, since you had to interview all these people. And unfortunately, I had to do that for a while when I was producing Soundtrack of the 60s, and it was one of my least favorite things. And
why?
I just didn't enjoy it, some of the people. And some of the people didn't want to be interviewed. And the strangest story I had was actually Tony Williams of the Platters, who clearly was not wanting to be interviewed and decided he'd do it in the bathroom. And good taste prohibits me from telling you the rest of that story, but you can figure it out yourself. And so as I'm remembering that, I'm thinking to myself, there must have been some strange interviews.
Well, I never did a bathroom interview, thank goodness.
Yes.
That I can recall. God, strange settings for interviews.
Or people who didn't want to be interviewed, or strange comments, you know, one of those surreal kind of things. You walk away from the interview just shaking your head.
Oh, God. George Mottola was sort of, he threatened Specialty Records on the air. He was going to sue them because they put out a Jesse Belvin track on a CD that incorporated some unissued Jesse Belvin material. And he sort of went off on the air. What he was going to do to Specialty Records. Of course, Specialty was very much entitled to put out that material. But that was a song that George Mottola had designated for Jesse to record after Guess Who had settled down a bit. Yeah. And, of course, Jesse never got a chance to record again. I can't really think of anything that was that bizarre, because people would come into the station. I remember I was interviewing, who was it? Was I interviewing I think it was Hank Ballard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here's a story about Hank Ballard. I didn't have any connection with him. A fan of my show, a guy named Jim Tucker, otherwise known as Wild Jimmy, a disbarred lawyer from Texas who was caught with marijuana, oh my goodness, in the 1960s, was disbarred for having marijuana and was in the Long Beach area, listened to my show, said, Hank's a friend of mine. I can go to, he's appearing in Hollywood, I can go to his show, keep him up all night. That's the only way I'll get him to come to your show on Sunday morning. So that's exactly what he did. He kept him up all night. Hank came into my show. It was a fun interview. And Jim and Hank stayed in Long Beach, and they actually rented an apartment together. And then Hank and Jim went to a KLON function at the Queen Mary, and Hank ran into this woman named Teresa McNeil. Okay, that was goodbye, Wild Jimmy. Hello, Teresa. So now he's living with Teresa. Teresa works her tail off to get Hank into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, pulls it off. She is in the hotel in New York City with Hank. He's appearing in New York. Gets the call from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Hank's been elected to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, is happy, goes out into the street, gets run over by a bus or a taxi cab, I'm not sure which. That's the end of Teresa. So Hank basically lives in Teresa's house in Los Alamitos until he passes away about a decade or so later. How's that for a story?
Oh, now, was Teresa a horn player?
Teresa had no idea. She was a fan. She was the ultimate fan. She took Hank to church. She cleaned him up, got rid of the girl group, got rid of him wearing a headband, and, you know, brought about a situation where Hank was sounding like the old Hank Ballard.
No, reason I asked in the latter days, and this is probably while he was with Teresa because he cleaned up good, I'd see appearances, and there was a horn player who was definitely female, and white, too, and I always wondered, who is that? Never did find out.
Wow. I never thought to ask.
Yeah,
I never knew.
Exactly. You know, it's sort of like in some cases asking who did the background singing, and then later you say to yourself, I really want to know that, and lost to history. We're talking to Steve Probst, who is preserving history, that is for sure. Those old school records, 1,000 selected R&B, rock and roll, and soul, 45 RPM singles. But as I say, there's 10 books. So, you know, one of them, I guarantee you, again, what was the first rock and roll record? A true argument settler. And, of course, probably, if I had to pick one favorite, L.A. R&B vocal groups, 1945 to 65, and more. So you can go to Amazon, just know how to spell Probst, P-R-O-P-E-S. And better yet, if you got any questions, we've got a few minutes left, and I hope you'll call 888-876-5593 on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Molly James, and that, of course, is Richie Valens. Come on, let's go. You can read about it on page 135 and 6 of those old school records. And interestingly, the flip side of that is Framed, which was originally Robin's record. You can read about that, too. Steve Probst wrote about both of them. And I got plenty of questions, but I don't want to completely hog you because we only got a few minutes, and Karen wants to join us. So let's see what we can, because Karen's got a question. I think she's actually following orders here, and we'll in fact fact, ask something, because if she asks me, I'm not going to know, but you will. So, Karen, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call. And my question is a group from 1962, and I remember them very well because it was the year I graduated, and the song was called Your Graduation Means Goodbye, and the group was the Cardigans.
It was on Mercury in 1957, but Steve, what do you know about it?
I don't know that much about the Cardigans. I do know that they were one of those sort of middle of the road type of group, like the Gaylords and the Crewcuts. But yeah. I can't really give you much background on the Cardigans. You're right; they were on Mercury.
Right, they had like three records, and then something on Span, and then they were gone.
Yeah. Sorry, I can't add much.
I remember this because it was 1962, the year I graduated, and I went to the School for the Visually Handicapped in Wisconsin, and of course the kids were from all over the state, and I was dating a guy who was, he was a sophomore, I was a senior. I knew when we graduated we weren't going to see each other, so somebody requested that song for the two of us. And I will never forget
that. All right.
For some reason.
Well, yeah, it's interesting they remembered because it was 5 years old at that time. But good deal and good story. Thank you, Karen. Appreciate it.
Can I bring up a Richie Valens story, if you don't mind?
Yeah, you know, believe it or not, I'm running out of time. So start, and if we don't finish, then that's why you'll be on next time. But tell me.
Well, this is the first 5-year increment that his death, the day the music died, so to speak, has not really been noted by the press. February of this year will be 65 years.
Yes.
So, for what it's worth, I guess that particular memory is no longer not celebrated, but certainly remembered. Bob Keane thought up a whole memorial series, and there were a whole bunch of memorial concerts and memorial dances held to honor Richie in the day after the few years after his death, but basically to make money for Bob Keane.
Well, yeah.
So that's, I'm going to leave you with that. Gil Rocha, who discovered Richie Valens and was in, Richie was in his band, is still with us, believe it or not.
Oh, that's
He's still
great.
Giving me stories.
Oh, that is great. And I know you've got some great ones, and we're going to tell them next time, because I love the way the police came to Bob Keane's door. And well, you'll tell the story. We know where it's going. And truly hilarious. And also Bob Keane talking about how if he wrote it, he could never sing it the same way twice.
Yeah, that's actually probably very much the case. So, always a pleasure to be chit-chatting with you about the music we both love.
And looking forward to it again soon. Thank you, Steve.
Well, you're welcome. Good night.
All right. So, those old school records, check it out. All you have to do is go to Amazon, P-R-O-P-E-S, Steve Propes. We'll pick it up right there next hour right here on WGN Radio.
I was walking down the street minding my own affairs. Two policemen grabbed me unawares. They said, is your name Henry? I said, oh, why, sure. They say, you the boy we've been looking for. Put me in the lineup and let the bright light shine. Have a ten-pole soul like me standing in that line. I knew I was a victim of someone's evil plan when a stew pigeon walked in and said, that's the man. Prosecuting attorney started prosecuting me. Man, that cat gave me the third degree. He said, where were you the night of June 29? I said, I was home in bed. He said, Judge, this man is lying.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. 1954 on Spark, Lieber and Stoller's label, they wrote it. It was the Robin, some of whom became later the Coasters. And Framed actually was the flip side of Ritchie Valens' Come On, Let's Go that Cindy had requested and we played earlier. And that was very typical for Ritchie Valens. He loved old R&B and he'd perform it, but he'd write his own stuff. And when he did, he'd never be able to record to play it the same way twice. So virtually what was on the record was never going to be what he ever sang in a concert. But nonetheless, just one of the many stories, and always good to talk to Steve Probst, which we did last hour, and will again, I am sure. So 888-876-5593, 888-88-Raleigh. Now, before we get to Jim in Richmond, yeah, eye doctor today, yep, want to tell you about this job. In case you're looking for work, well, here is the deal. $48 an hour if you're working full-time. That's $99,840 a year, roughly $100,000 a year, and you don't need any experience. Well, I'll let you decide whether you need experience or not. What are you going to be? You're going to be a robot. Apparently, this comes from Tesla, and they're looking for a data collection operator. And it reveals that the lucky employee will have to walk a predetermined test route every day for data collection. They'll be expected to move for more than 7 hours each shift while carrying up to 30 pounds. They have to have the ability to stand, sit, walk, stoop, bend, reach, crouch, and twist throughout the day. Workers will also need to wear and operate a motion capture suit and VR headset for extended periods of time. And the Help Wanted ad warns that the device can be disorienting, potentially leading to result in VR sickness symptoms. You have to be between 5'7 and 5'11. That's really about the only requirement other than being somewhat agile. And collecting data, as well as helping with engineering requests and reporting any issues with the equipment, are the main functions of the role. And so Tesla, as I say, Elon Musk's company, is willing to pay up to $48 an hour for this. So apparently they have already hired over 50 people to carry out the task of training the robot. The robot, by the way, is Optimus. And apparently the bots will go into low production mode within Tesla before they're made available to other companies, which they expect to be sometime in 2026. So they're looking for genuinely useful humanoid robots, and in order to get them, they need genuinely useful humans. And so, yeah, and so for the next year or so, if you can do all that stuff, that's it. There have been several versions of Optimus since being announced in 2021. And at the end of last year, there was a video that showed the robot pick up, hold, and put down an egg without breaking it. All right, yeah, if all you have to do is pick up eggs, pretty good. But that 30 pounds and twisting and squatting and all that, I don't know. But apparently so far, what Optimus can do, forward walking, squatting, squat walking, sidestepping, turning while walking, lifting objects from the ground to eye level, squeezing and gripping an object while lifting it, climbing stairs, squatting and picking up an object, walking on a slope or hill, sliding objects, using a drill, pushing and pulling objects, turning with an object, and using a screwdriver. And yeah, what could possibly go wrong? And Musk hopes that Optimus will walk humans into a future of abundance, a future where there is no poverty. What, is Optimus going to come to your house and give you money? A future where you can have whatever you want in terms of products and services. Yeah, but maybe not a job. He's also sounded the alarm about development of humanoids, saying they can basically chase you anywhere. What? He says it's something we should be quite concerned about. If a robot can follow you anywhere, what if they get a software update one day and they're not so friendly anymore? Oh man, this is the stuff of which horror movies are made. And so that is the deal. There's a job waiting for you if you can do all that stuff. Like I say, no experience necessary, but an awful lot of agility. 888-876-5593. Jim in Richmond. So you went to the eye doctor, got that Kenalog shot. How are you doing?
No, I didn't get Kenalog today.
Oh.
I went there and I explained to the doctor what happened with the stress test.
Yes.
And he was staring at me and he was very attentive. And then I said how I could read the label on my T-shirt that I couldn't read since I bought it.
Right.
And then stuff like that. And I could see the faces.
Right.
And I said, And then I jokingly turned to him and I says, "Can I get one of those shots that induces labor?" And I said that to get him to
right.
laugh.
Yeah.
And he was very serious. And he goes, "I have never experienced that. I'm going to have to look into that." And I thought that was great. You
yeah.
know? So then he looked at the images they took and he says, "Your eyes are clear. This is, you know, second." That's what he said last month when
uh-huh.
he gave me the Vabysmo.
Uh-huh.
He says, "Your eyes are clear. I can't give you the catalog because there's no need for that."
That's great.
And then I go, "Vabysmo."
Yeah.
And then he goes, "Yeah, because it seems to be working for you." So then I had to wait 20 minutes until they could contact the insurance company whether they'd pay again for it.
Yeah.
And then they did. So I got a Vabysmo shot today.
All right. All right. And now, how are you doing?
Well, I did the wrong thing for the last 3 days. My eyes were irritating like crazy. So I was rubbing them and rubbing them. And then I said to him, "My eyes have been irritating and I've been rubbing them." And he goes, "Yeah, I noticed. Stop doing that."
Right. Exactly.
And then as I'm walking out, he goes, "I don't have much faith in this Vabysmo shot, but boy, is it working for you."
That's great.
And I'm sitting here right now with a warm washcloth over my eyes because the skin is irritated.
Yeah.
Char said it looks like I look like a red raccoon where I've been rubbing. So I haven't rubbed at all anymore.
Good.
And the vision is clear again.
All
but
right.
it's not, you know, it's not improved, but,
right.
you know, distance-wise.
Right.
But I don't have that fog and stuff.
That's wonderful.
And then I even got other good news is I got a text today from the Miami people.
Uh-huh.
And they got the check.
Okay.
And I says, "Oh, that's great. Could you please call me?" And yeah, because I'd like to discuss things with you.
Yeah.
Well, she can't make that decision because it's my son
right.
that has right. to make that. She says, "I'll talk to him, and then I'll let you know." And then while Shara and I were eating dinner because it's grocery night tonight, mm-hmm. that night, I heard back that we're going to call tomorrow night. So I am
great.
Over the moon.
Great.
So then I could talk to them about, you know, going online to find out about the baby food and stuff.
Yeah.
And that. And then I got a third thing. My younger brother called me today, "How are your eyes and stuff?"
Yeah.
And then he goes to me, "Are you on the radio on GN?"
Oh, my God.
I go, yeah, I call in every now and then. So we have an aunt, and he goes, you know, says the aunt's name. She says, she listens every night, all night long, you know, and she said, "I swore it was him,"
uh-huh.
and stuff. So I would like to say to Peggy, if you're listening, call in because Raleigh loves first-time callers.
Yes, absolutely. And hello, Peggy. Thank you for listening. That's great.
Right. And because I told my brother I would say that.
Yeah.
And then finally, could you play one for me either tonight or tomorrow?
What you want?
Just My Imagination by
okay.
The Temptations, or is that one that...
No, that's fine. I'll play it. Believe me, for you, I'll do it.
Okay.
All right. Be my pleasure. Okay,
and
thanks.
And I thank you for everything.
Absolutely.
And I'll be listening tonight.
All right, great. Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Right. So, yeah, happy to play it. And not one of my favorite Motown songs, but it doesn't matter. Jim loves it, and hey, the Temptations are pretty good. So we'll leave it at that. 888-876-5593. We'll get to Don in Beloit. Wants to talk about Donahue. I said we would later in the week, and this is later in the week, so we will. And James on the South Side with all of his stories. We're definitely going to get there tonight because we ran out of time last night. But there's always room for you. 888-876-5593. Temptations coming up next on WGN Radio.
Thank you. each day through my window, I watch her as she passes by. I say to myself, you're such a lucky guy. To have a girl like her is truly a dream come true. Out of all the fellas in the world, she belongs to you. But it was just my imagination running away with me. It was just my imagination running away with me. Ooh, soon we'll be married and raise a family.
Oh yeah,
a cozy little home out in the country with two children, maybe three. I tell you.
James. Well, The Temptations on Gordy, 1971, number one for 3 weeks on the R&B charts and 2 weeks on the pop charts. So what don't I like about it? All right, well, see, this was the deal with me and Norman Whitfield. And Norman Whitfield, not like I know him personally, by the way, but Norman Whitfield, I thought, was a great writer. He did a number of things that were just terrific early on. Don't get me wrong, you know, Ain't Too Proud to Beg, and just a lot of things. But deal was that he had been working with the Temptations almost exclusively from 1966 till about 1974. And around 68, 69, he started to improvise with what was called at the time psychedelic soul. And when David Ruffin left and Dennis Edwards came in 68, here comes Whitfield moving the group into, you know, harder sound, kind of a blend of psychedelic rock and funk. I think one of the inspirations was Sly and the Family Stone, actually, or Funkadelic. But anyway, he in some cases had contemporary topical lyrics and, you know, moving from love songs to social issues. And the first Temptations record that really featured quote-unquote psychedelic soul was probably Cloud Nine in late 68. And again, if this is your thing, it won a Grammy Award as far as that goes. And it did wonderfully well. I just didn't like it. He did this for Edwin Starr, Undisputed Truth and all that kind of stuff. But ultimately, he and the Temptations had somewhat of a falling out. And the deal was that they felt that he was too interested in production techniques, instrumentation, rather than the group sound and singing and things of this nature. And so it wasn't pretty after a while. But he had a number of hits. And then later, when Motown moved to L.A. permanently, he didn't. And so he formed his own, I think, Whitfield Records, and Undisputed Truth was on there for a while. And later, Rose Royce, Willie Hutch, and some others followed. And so there were several things. And of course, Rose Royce Car Wash in 76, that on MCA, that was definitely Whitfield. And you know, there was a number of things that you could say were just terrific, but just not my thing. And, you know, some people loved it, some people didn't. And you look at the Temptations, and I'll go for the early stuff any day of the week. And Just My Imagination was recorded at Golden World, by the way, Studio B. And Golden World was a great little label on, I don't remember the street. I do remember the phone number, but I'm not going to give it to you because I've used it as a password. But I know it's a long story. Anyway, the deal is that Golden World was just a wonderful little label, and Rick Tick as well, which was there. And then Motown wound up buying both of those. But, you know, some of the Temptations early stuff, just it doesn't get better than that. So, you know, Whitfield came in probably around Ain't Too Proud to Beg time. He wrote that with Eddie Holland. So that would probably be the first big, big hit. All right. So we did that for Jim because Jim wanted to hear it. So much for psychedelic soul. All right. 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, I promised Don we'd talk about Phil Donahue, and so we shall. What do you want to talk about?
Yeah. Thanks. I
I really appreciate you talking to me, Raleigh, and I'm glad to hear Jim's news.
Yeah.
Earlier. Yeah. I was busy playing hockey last night, and we had a late Brewers extra inning game tonight. I was listening on the radio, so I'm calling in. I thought, you know, we deserve to give some kind of take on Phil, and I had some thoughts that I thought I would share with you.
Okay.
I mean, I wasn't really into him, you know, that much, I would say. I read his biography. It's somewhere in my house with all the books I have. I have his biography, and I kind of would roll my eyes at that kind of stuff, I think. But it has some cool pictures. He has amazing guest stars on his show and so on.
Okay.
Him and Marlo on a moped, a Vespa moped in Rome, you know, and stuff like that. Yeah.
Well, he, of course, started in Dayton more than anywhere else. And when he went to WLWD, the Avco station, that's really what paved his way for syndication. He had been on HIO before that. But when he was on LWD, that absolutely was gonna make him national at some point. And originally somewhat regional, you know, LWD was like the Avco stations in Dayton and Columbus and Cincinnati. And the other stations that were on at the time, it was Crosley, which actually it was Avco Corporation, but they were still using Crosley Broadcasting then. But anyway, from there he went to national syndication. That would have been 1970. And so for four years he was doing it from Dayton. And then he moved it to Chicago for 10 years. And then afterwards to New York after he was married to Marlo and all that kind of stuff. But when he was living in Ohio, his next door neighbor was Irma Bombeck.
That's what I was going to tell you about. Yeah, I was going to transition to that later. Yeah.
Hang on a minute. Don't go away. We've got to do the news and more on WGN Radio.
Deep within my heart lies a melody, a song of old San Antone, where in dreams I live with a memory beneath the stars. All that moonlit past that only he would know still hears my broken song of love. Crooning all your splendor and on all it to my heart. Call back my rose, rose of sand and tone. Lips so sweet and tender.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and of course that's Patsy Cline, San Antonio Rose, James on the South Side wanted to hear it. 1961 on Decca, and actually it was a very interesting album. It was in Patsy Cline's Showcase, and that came out in 61 and produced two singles that became mega hits right away, and that was I Fall to Pieces and Crazy. And it was recorded in late 1960. She had just been recovering from a bad car wreck. And this was done at Bradley Film in Nashville. And it was five sessions that occurred. And that was a deal. The album itself probably didn't do that well. But after she died, Decca re-released it. And, oh, man, just took off like a wildfire. And then MCA, you know, Decca became MCA, released it in 1973 and then put it on CD in 88. And the CD cover is from the 63 re-release. If you look at that, by the way, it's not the original 1961 cover, for those of you who care. But anyway, Patsy Cline and San Antonio Rose. And we're talking to Don and Beloit, of course, Phil Donahue, star of many, many television shows. But, you know, actually it was his radio show on WHIO that more than anything caused WLWD to hire him for that TV show, because he was at HIO Radio for like 4 years, you know, doing a similar format to what would be on television. So anyway, yes, he was in Centerville right by Irma Bombeck, and they were lifelong friends.
Yeah, that's just amazing. I mean, he was such a game. I mean, you got to admit, he was just a total freaking game changer.
Well, I don't know that I don't know that I'd go that far. I think that there were a lot of things on daytime television then. I don't think he was necessarily, you know, the guy who was a game changer. Certainly, he was part of that ilk. My favorite comment from interviewing a Carney guy once, who was interviewed on NPR talking about the death of the Midway. He's, what do you mean? It's been on daytime television for years. And of course, Donahue tamer than what came later. But still, it was a confrontational show very often.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, he had a lot of different people. But getting to that, I mean, I have to mention that, like, in the entire history of recorded TV, he was one who did something really interesting, one of the most amazing things ever. You can find it on YouTube, but it's Milton Friedman on his show, I think several times, but this one time talking about the future of humanity and the reasons capitalism is a better method than any other method. It's a beautiful...
Well, I haven't seen that, but kudos to Donahue, because he normally wouldn't be the kind of guy that would embrace Milton Friedman.
Right. And then getting back to us and you know, my thoughts on him, you know, he did have Aretha and many others, you know, musical people. He had Aretha on
playing
dual piano with her. Of course, it was both sides now, but at least he made an effort to have some musical guests like her on, and he did a great job with some of them.
No, there were, you know, you're talking about a couple decades worth of daytime television. Everybody was on that. Johnny Carson was on it.
Yep.
You know, so
I grew up in the suburbs, and people that were questioning the suburbs and everything, it was just brilliant. You know, and when I found out that you know, we were huge fans in my family of Irma Bombeck, and when I found out as a kid, you know, my mom raised four boys, and we just got a big hoot out of her. We just thought she was just amazing.
Oh yeah, she was
when
great.
We found out she was a neighbor, like right in the neighborhood or next door or something.
Yeah.
It just gave me such a joy.
Right.
As a kid, to know that they were friends and commiserated and helped each other.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Centerville, and she was a Dayton native, and she was funny from the beginning. But what was interesting about Irma is when she first went to college, she went to OU in Athens for a semester, completely flunked out, went back, was living at home, went to University of Dayton, of course, and just bloomed. You know, she'd been writing from junior high school, so it wasn't that she couldn't write. I just don't think her and Athens worked out too well. But, you know, when her, I guess her first book came out in 65, but by the 70s, her newspaper columns, you know, they were semi-weekly. That was something like 30 million readers in 900 newspapers. So, yeah, very few people could claim they didn't know who Irma Bombeck was back then.
The grass is always greener over the septic tank.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Yeah. Yeah, and so At Wit's End, I think, was the first book.
Oh yeah,
you know, she was not totally without controversy either. Unlike Phil, she was certainly more on the conservative side of the aisle. But it's interesting because she supported the Equal Rights Amendment, and that caused some of her fans to just go crazy. You got some bookstores that removed her books and things like that.
Right.
And
I remember that.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, and of course, you know, the issue was. Wasn't anything really about women. It was, again, about states' rights. But, you know, this was, she just didn't realize she was going to rattle these cages, because from her viewpoint, she was just doing an issue to support women. So,
right.
Anyway, she...
And she lives on with the Irma Bombeck Writers Workshop.
Absolutely.
Or something. I think Dayton still does.
Yes, they do. At University of Dayton, it's like a three-day deal. They absolutely do. And
that TV station still lives on with his TV studio. Still there. Yeah. It's like the newsroom of that.
Well,
it's affiliate.
Not the same ownership, to say the least, but nonetheless, that's the deal. So, Donahue will not be forgotten. That's for sure.
Yeah. It was great talking to you, Raleigh.
Okay, thanks for calling. Appreciate it.
You have a good one. Okay, take care.
Right.
Bye-bye.
So, yeah, and in fact, in latter years, she moved from Dayton. She moved to Phoenix in Paradise Valley. Yeah, passed by her house. And that's where she was living, actually. She died in San Francisco, but that's because she had traveled there for a kidney transplant, which sadly she didn't make it. And she suffered for years from polycystic kidney disease. And she didn't play that up. She had breast cancer, and there was some talk about that at the time. I mean, that was fairly public, but she didn't really come forth with the fact that she was dealing with chronic illness for since she was like a teenager. And she didn't make that public early on. So anyway, rest in peace, Irma. And it was wonderful, wonderful. The grass is always greener over the septic tank was 1976. And that was right before it was I Lost Everything in the Postnatal Depression. And of course, if life is a bowl of cherries, what am I doing in the pits? And on and on. So when I grow hair, when I want to grow up, I want to go to Boise. All right. And that was a great little book because that was children surviving cancer. And she got the American Cancer Society's Medal of Honor in 1990 for that. But, you know, here we are talking so much about Irma when, in fact, it's Phil who just recently died. And his awards are equally, if not more, numerous and legendary. So that is the deal there. But yeah, he was, toward the end, he was on MSNBC for a while, and that was, you'd think that that'd be a perfect fit because it fit his politics, but he claimed that NBC was demanding, like two conservative guests for every liberal, and they considered him to be two liberals or something of this nature, but he was not pleased with that, and that didn't last very long. But nonetheless, he also, I think, was in line to host a game show, Greed. And in fact, a friend of mine, Randy West, wrote a great book about television and particularly game show hosts. And I'll have to have him on because Chuck Woolery, by the way, got that job. All right. So 888-876-5593, but I digress. We'll get to Nick in Baltimore next and you two coming up on WGN Radio. Bomb a 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 dang a dang dang a ding a dong ding boom 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 boom. You saw me standing alone without a dream in my heart. Bomb a dang a dang dang a ding a dong ding boom boom. You knew just what I was there for. You heard me saying a prayer. WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, 888-876-5593. We'll get to Nick in Baltimore and Carl in Riverside and James on the South Side and more coming up. But about Phil Donahue a moment, and I don't in any way mean to diminish his impact because he certainly was a leader in many ways in daytime television. But when you think before he went national, when he was on that little Avco syndication with WLWD and T and C and like that, he was certainly good. But to me, man, I'll tell you what, Paul Baby Dixon. Now, that was not somebody who was going to have a national show, but the Paul Dixon show was just my fave. And Ruth Lyons and the 50-50 Club, and which, of course, spawned Bob Braun and all that. So a lot of really good local / regional television. But Donahue really came out of the pack and obviously burst on the scene in a big, big way. But interestingly, those who, and I've heard in some interviews, people say, well, you know, he was responsible for what followed, including Oprah. I'm like, if you want to draw a direct line for Oprah, you better go to Virginia Graham. And if you don't remember who she was, you better look it up. Girl talk. All right, and more. Nick in Baltimore, welcome to WGN Radio.
Yeah, hi, Wally. Yeah, speaking of Oprah, her big claim to fame was here.
Yeah, absolutely, because she'd been, she'd been on radio in Nashville and then a reporter on TV5 in Nashville, WLAC, and then Baltimore, yes, and that's where she met Gail as well, who became a lifelong friend. You betcha, Baltimore. I agree.
And she took off from there, you know, a great talent.
Yes,
you know.
Yes.
But, you know, there's so many great people, like you said, and I'll be real quick, get a lot of calls, I loved Phil Donahue. The first time I saw Phil Donahue was out of Wheeling, West Virginia.
Okay.
Channel 7 out of Wheeling, West Virginia, which carried that show, and it's the first time I saw it. And shortly thereafter, it went national, and I was able to, you know, they had it here. But he was the first one I saw that did that long-form, you know, interview thing during the day. And of course, my favorite was Tom Snyder.
Okay.
You know, and... He never really, I think he always got short shrift, but he had, I loved Tom Snyder's show.
Yeah, you're right. He did a lot of people, for whatever reason, minimized. Of course, Tomorrow was late at night in the Late Late Show, as far as that goes. So we're not really talking about daytime stuff particularly. So, yeah, he had some great stories and some great stuff as well. Most of them, you know, there are many. If we actually, and television's not my thing. I've mentioned that many times. Never owned one myself, but till much, much later when I was with John. But in any event, if we were to go down the list, there's a lot, like I mentioned, particularly because I read so many people talking about it was an inspiration for Oprah. I'm like, come on, you know, the name like Virginia Graham, they don't even remember her. So
I remember that.
Yeah, she was
I was like 9 years old when that was on. It was like in the mid-60s.
Yeah, like 63 to 67 or so. It was a very big deal.
Yeah.
You know, there are probably more. I think most people think of daytime as being the domain of soap operas, and while that was largely true, there were talk shows. And
They were syndicated.
A lot of them were syndicated. You're absolutely right. Yes. Yes.
That was one of them, But, you know, Tom Snyder had a radio show, too, so he was...
Yes.
But his big thing was he was a newscaster, and he had all his anchor jobs at NBC and WABC and all over the place.
Yeah, he worked at WRIT in AM in Milwaukee, and then was in Kalamazoo. But I think he was mostly doing news. I don't remember him actually playing records. I'm done. By the way, it's just you and me talking because I blew a break and this is the important midnight break, and so we can continue to talk on the stream here. But Adam did the right thing, saying let's go to commercials now. All right. So yes, very good. So yeah, he got the job at KTLA in Channel 5. In I guess it was like early 60s, and then he went back to the Midwest to KYW when it was in Cleveland TV. And, you know, I think he went to Philly when, remember, that was the deal where NBC forced Westinghouse to give up Philadelphia for Cleveland, or they were going to pull their affiliates. And later the FCC said, oh, no, Westinghouse, you get Philadelphia back. Okay. And by the way, you can keep the call letters.
I was going to ask you that because I was going to say he was there when they switched.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And so he was in Philly for like 5 years and then went back to L.A. and was doing KNBC TV News. And that I think he was doing that when they launched Tomorrow, which would have been, what, 73 maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, it was around 73.
Yeah, so he was...
Had to be because... Yeah. That's about right.
Because like within a couple of years, he moved to New York. But for a while, he was doing that KNBC News at the same time he was doing Tomorrow.
Right.
Yeah.
He had a thing about Fred Silver. They didn't get along or something.
Well, that's a long list.
Yeah. Because he did a bit on the Tomorrow Show one time about. Fred Silverman, which is when Fred Silverman was over at NBC, it was funny. He did some funny things, but there were a lot of great talk shows, like you say, and with radio and TV. Of course, you're the greatest on radio, but
exactly. But Donahue certainly had a lot more lasting power than many. You're talking about so many years, and I don't think there's anybody who didn't know him. But, you know, 88, he had a long life and a good one.
Yeah. You know, did I ever tell you we have a second yet?
Yeah, I've got another 5 minutes, actually.
Okay. you know, you're the reason I put up the antenna on my roof when I lived over in Dundalk. I had to, because when I first heard you on DB, when you were in DB.
Oh, yeah, in Philly, sure.
In Philly, yeah. And I got you on a, you know, we had that ducting thing. And I said, this lady's really cool. And I actually put up an antenna so I could get DB. And a friend of mine did the same thing. When I did it, he did the same thing. And so we listened. This is back before the internet, of course.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So you cost me about $500.
Well, see, Gerald should have given me a commission or something. So
it was worth it.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. But yeah,
it was really worth it.
And there were so many short time TV shows too, like Joe Pine or Les Crane. I mean, we could go on and on. I'm not in any way claiming they had the impact of Donahue, especially Les Crane, but some good shows.
Well, you know, you mentioned Joe Pine.
Yeah.
Joe Pine was on the radio.
Of course he was.
And on television out of Metro Media in Washington, Channel 5.
Absolutely. He was from Chester, Pennsylvania originally.
Was he?
Oh, yeah. And so right. He, oh, gosh, I think his first station was Brookhaven. You know that WPWA Brookhaven?
Okay.
And so, and then he was on ILM in Wilmington. Then he went.
I remember when they were live all the time.
Right. He went back to some little station in Chester. I don't remember the call letters, but I'm not even sure they're on the air anymore. I don't know. But anyway, and then he went to Kenosha, and that was WLIP, which a lot of people who listen to GN will remember WLIP. And so, but, you know, he'd always do something in short order. You know, WLIP, I think the owner was a guy named Lipman or something. Well, anyway, bottom line was he winds up storming out of the station. Joe's yelling. Oh, God, it was a mess. And so
What was the story with him when Kennedy was assassinated? They pulled him off the air, and that's when they put Bob Grant on because they were afraid that he, you know, because Pine didn't like the Kennedys.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, I don't know because I'm not a.
That's a story I heard.
Yeah, yeah, but see, I'm not 100% sure about the years on that. You know, that's the thing, because when I think about the Kennedy years, for a while he was in Montreal on CKGM, and then he was back in L.A., you know, and I'm not sure that he was. I mean, that could be very true, and I just don't know, but I'm a blank on that period of time. You know, he was wonderfully polarizing and controversial, and, you know, his time in Wilmington was just great. And, you know, and many more, you know, and he'd have everybody on from Anton LaVey to the Nazis, you know, I mean, you name it, the followers of Charles Manson, whatever. And,
yeah, they would come up to that podium, right?
The beef box.
Yeah, the beef box, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember all.
Yeah, absolutely, the beef box. Wally George did that later, too, the beef box, but yes, the beef box.
Morton Downey Jr. do a form of it, too?
Yeah, and he was interesting. I knew him when he was still a rock and roll disc jockey, Doc Downey. But anyway, yeah, they all would kind of do that. But, you know, the best was when he took on Frank Zappa. And that's a very stupid thing to do because Frank Zappa was a very, very bright and quick individual. And, you know, Pine would, you know, the hippies or whatever, he hated it, just hated it. And so he said to him, "I guess your long hair makes you a woman," to which Zappa said, "So I guess your wooden leg makes you a table." And so, yeah, and then oh God, Paul Krasner, oh God, that he was on too, and of course, you know, talk about counterculture people, and Pine had insulted him not about his viewpoints but about his acne scars, right? So Krasner turns to him and said, "Do you take off your wooden leg when you make love to your wife?" Oh man!
Oh yeah! Oh my God! Yeah,
it was. It was not not a pretty thing, to say the
No, he died of cancer, I think.
Yes, yes. And a lot of people thought that he had lost that leg due to a war injury, but it was not. It was, in fact, cancer. And so that was much earlier. But yeah, he but he was an original, and, you know, but I guess he was diagnosed with lung cancer before the 60s were over, because he died in early 70, I think, and he'd stopped the show in the late 60s.
Oh, yeah. You know, hit the radio show, I'll just give you a bit of trivia.
Here, wait. I got to do this. I think I got to do a tease. Hang on.
Hear that whistle, it's 10 o'clock.
Don't let go, don't let go.
Come on, baby, it's time to rock.
Don't let go.
I'm so happy I got you here.
Don't let go, don't let go.
Keeps me grinning from ear to ear.
Don't let go, don't let go.
Ooh, this feeling's killing me.
Oh, shucks.
Well, I won't stop for $1 million.
I love you so.
I just hold me tight and don't let go. Thunder, lightning, wind, and rain.
Don't let go. Don't let go.
The fist thumbing inside my brain.
Don't let go, don't let go.
I'm so eager, I'm nearly dying.
Don't let go, don't let go.
You've been keeping your lip from mine.
Don't let go,
yeah.
Don't let go.
Ooh, this feeling's killing me.
WGN Radio, I'm Riley James. Well, we've got another hour to talk. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. We'll pick it back up with Nick in Baltimore here in a moment, and Carl in Riverside, James on the South Side, and hopefully you too. Now, there was something else that, I should say, by the way, I played that because Robert and Stickney requested it, and that was Roy Hamilton, Don't Let Go, 1957 on Epic, and talking actually during the news on the stream, but not on the radio, with Nick, who we pick it back up in Baltimore. All right, back to you, Nick.
Yeah, and I'm sorry about the break. Usually I watch the clock, so next time I call...
Well, you're better than me, then. I'm not...
I'll believe, so they should yell at me, not you.
Yeah.
We were talking about Joe Pyne, and here's the question I had for you, and I promise I'll conclude. His show was syndicated on the radio, as well as TV, but it was on two stations here... Back then, in the early 60s, what were the syndication deals like? I mean, could you do that? I mean, obviously they did, but you know, so there was no exclusivity, or
NBC carried that. You know, back in I think it was started in 1966. NBC Radio Network began syndicating the show nationally, but I wonder, was there something else being syndicated at the same time?
Well, that, he was on WITH here and WCBM at the same time.
All right, same show?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Well, all right, they just allowed it. I mean, CBM would have been the primary affiliate, but I guess they would have allowed it on ITH.
And Metro Media, yeah. But I remember that, believe it or not. It was there, so...
Well,
interesting.
Yeah, I would, you know, I mean, ITH had such a poor signal, and I still laugh. They're the only station I know that advertised their pinpoint coverage. Why buy the big stations that cover everybody who aren't going to be your customers? Just come to us. We have pinpoint coverage. Loved that.
Well, you accentuate the positive.
Well,
the
what you wind up doing is competing with the little daily newspapers or the things that they direct mail to you or that kind of stuff. But in any event, I don't know that anybody thought of it as a terrible competitor. I would assume at the time that CBM was the primary affiliate and they had to get permission for it, but I don't know.
Right. Well, they would have been, I think.
Well, they definitely were. I mean, but what I don't know is whether they would have had to get permission. I assume they would have.
They probably just let them have it.
Yeah.
Because, they use it as a promotion, actually.
Yeah. That's
believe it or not.
That's interesting. I'll actually try to look that up because I am curious about it, but I would almost bet that it was CBM as primary and that they had to approve it. Now, the question, of course, is why would ITH want to, but, hey, we'll try and find out.
Get get an adult audience mixing.
Yeah, that'll be a switch. Yeah, I guess. Right. So, all right. I'll look for that. Alrighty, that's a great question.
Have a great rest of the show, and right. Hi to everybody in Chicago and everywhere else.
Absolutely. Thanks for calling, Nick. Do it again soon.
Hey, thanks a lot.
All right. So 888-876-5593, 8888-RALEIGH. So now I want to find that out. Tuesday, I'm going by CBM having to give them permission, but I don't know for sure. Carl in Riverside, welcome to WGN Radio.
Yeah, hi again, Raleigh. Just wanted to say thank you. I happened to catch the little Kenny Rankin stuff last night.
Oh, yes.
I thought that was really nice.
Yes, yes. So you got to hear my favorite. Haven't we met?
Yeah, and... I think I where did I read that? He was on Johnny Carson not less than 25 times.
I wouldn't be surprised.
You know? And there's one song that Johnny really liked a lot. Now, you know a lot about music, so it's not the song When Sonny Gets Blue, which Rankin did.
Right. Oh, I know he did that on that same Don Costa album you like from 77, yes.
Yeah. There's a song, Love Becomes a Cold and Rainy Day. What's the name of that song?
Oh, God. Oh, man. I know exactly what you're thinking about. It's not on that album.
Carson was absolutely in love with that. I saw a biography on PBS once.
Yeah.
And he was on guitar singing this song.
Here's That Rainy Day.
Here's That Rainy Day.
Yeah.
That is the name of it.
Yeah, it is. That is the name of it. But it's so funny because there's a completely different song with the same title that's one of my all-time favorite records. It is not related remotely, but it's funny how that works out. But yeah, Here's That Rainy Day was on that Costa album. So yeah, that was 77.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Do me a favor. You don't have to play this sometime unless you want to. But, you know, we were... chatting about Kenny Lattimore not too long ago.
Yeah, I'm going to play For You tonight.
Oh, you mean the river? That
well, it's called For You. Kenny
Mitchell?
Kenny Lattimore. It's called For You. I don't know what it is. A listener requested it, and I'm playing it tonight.
Yeah,
Kenny Lattimore.
Check out Kenny Lattimore's cover of the you know what The River by Joni Mitchell is, right? The Christmas song?
Yeah, it's a horrible record. Yeah, all right. Just horrible. All right. I'll check it out, but I don't think it's going to work for me, but glad you like the Kenny Rankin stuff, and now that you reminded me of Here's That Rainy Day, I'll play the intervals.
Maybe come Christmas.
Oh, God, help us. Well, you know, I will be on live Christmas Eve and Christmas night, so maybe so.
She's, as you probably know, she's lamenting about dumping her boyfriend. That's what the song is about.
I'm not a big lyrics person. All right. Thanks. I appreciate it.
I'm doing good tonight, aren't I?
All right. Okay, talk to you later.
Hey, no, seriously, what? I'm going to let you go. Thanks a lot. Seriously, I appreciate it.
Sure.
I'm glad I caught it last night.
Me too. Thanks. Appreciate it. All right,
okay.
So good deal. Yeah, Here's That Rainy Day. In fact, when I saw that on the Kenny Rankin, I was like, oh, somebody's redone the intervals. Yeah, there I am dreaming again. All right. In fact, I'll play the intervals maybe next right here on WGN Radio.
Oh, my love.
WGN Radio. I'm Riley James. Well, those are the Intervals. Here's That Rainy Day. That's the song I like with that title. 1962 on Class, Leon Renee's label. He and his son Googie produced that. And the Intervals, if they don't sound familiar, well, group member Paul Grady wrote it, but the names you might remember would be Ron Townsend and Lamont McLemore. Yeah, later of the Fifth Dimension. But back when they were in St. Louis in 1961, they formed, and in 1962, Leon Renee released Here's That Rainy Day. All right, so 888-876-5593-8888-ROLLYE. And that takes us to James on the South Side with his 4 million stories. So what's up, James?
How are you?
Oh, I can't complain. How about yourself? How you feeling? You haven't broken anything lately, have you?
No, okay, thankfully.
Good. And didn't sprain it, strain it, or otherwise upset a joint?
No.
Okay, good.
No, had a headache for a whole day until a little bit late today.
But it went away. It went away. The show is healing. How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
Oh, yeah. I was going to, mention right quick about when Oprah came to Chicago. It was still, the program was called AM Chicago,
right?
And originally the host before her had been David Hartman,
right? Absolutely,
he's still around.
Is he okay? What is he doing now?
I think he's doing some work for PBS and NPR.
Okay.
So he's 89 years old.
Yeah, no, I know. And I know he, I used to see him occasionally when I'd be flipping the channels. He was on the History Channel, I think, for a moment. So how about that?
Yeah, he does that a little bit, yeah. All right. He did a little acting. Lucas Tanner is that was the reason why I remembered about it. And when I think about put the whole thing together when it comes to that, I think about that program.
All right. Well, there you go. Well, I defer to everybody else when it comes to television, God knows. So.
Okay. But let's get to at least a couple of these stories.
Which one floated your boat the most tonight?
Okay. I have to say the one that kind of got me a little bit was the woman whose daughter was denied a passport because of her name. Game of Thrones.
You wonder about that, and then mom is saying she had to cancel her expensive Disneyland trip, and I have absolutely no idea. So the passport office, by the way, admitted they made a mistake. And so, and they said, you know, we apologize for the delay. So that was the deal there. So I'm sure it was a case of somebody just saw the name and bottom line has said, well, that can't be right. And of course, I couldn't pronounce them to save my soul. But so anyway, she did get her passport from what I understand.
Yeah, but I can just imagine somebody trying to pronounce it.
Well, yeah, forget about it. Yeah. Yeah. Now, one that I loved along the same lines of travel stories was, oh, God, a woman books a hotel and finds out it's used as a homeless shelter.
Yeah, that was, that tells you, Who was looking out for whom here?
I don't know, but what was funny was the name of the place was the Relax Inn. I don't think too relaxing. And so this was...
Oh, no.
Yeah. And but you know, I'm always suspect of going to these websites where you can get these fantastic deals and all that. I think you need to do a little more checking than those aggregators. You know, so she goes to one of those sites, hot rate feature. Oh, it was a hot rate, all right. And you know, she said that she'd done well in the past with this. Now, I haven't looked at all the details, but the idea of a mystery reservation system, what is the deal? Amazing deals that once purchased cannot be canceled, exchange, refund, or cancel. Prepayment or require. Travelers don't discover the hotel where they'll be staying until the booking is complete. Are you out of your mind? All right,
reminds me of that old phrase that if it looks too good to be real, it probably is.
Well, the idea that you're going to go to a website and you're going to choose, say, a 2-star hotel right there. You're kind of in trouble, but all right. And she's charging the general neighborhood she wishes to stay. And for the description, it says Quality Inn or similar. Now, by the way, Quality Inn, of course, they're a chain, but they're not similar. One Quality Inn to another can be very, very different. And so after booking her mysterious deal, she revealed that it was the Relax Inn. And she thought, well, that's fine. Now, again, she's willing to do this. Now she gets the name of the hotel, says it's fine. She doesn't check it out, doesn't go online, doesn't want to find anything. So apparently she arrives late in the evening and is less than impressed, to say the least. When there's an adult bookstore in the parking lot, that usually tells you that, you know, it's not maybe up to snuff.
Yeah, it's not that you're basically running into the state. And we're not talking petticoat junk.
Yeah, so the desk clerk told her the room she'd booked had been given away to a long-term renter. And that's when she found out the hotel was temporary housing for the homeless. Okay. And then here's another one where someone who uses this this mystery reservation was sent to a homeless shelter in Phoenix. And she said, I didn't mind it. The hotel maintained itself and had separate wings and... So, unbelievable. All right. So, there you are. There you go.
This was another one that was off my, what we would call a save list that I hadn't used. And I went through and I said, this might be just what you might be up the, and a bunch of them were, apparently. Better than the ones that I originally sent.
Right.
Here's another one. The Atlanta hospital that lost a piece of a guy's skull.
Yes, and then wanted to charge him for a replacement. Now, firstly, and it was a big piece. It was like 28 by 28 square inches or something crazy. And firstly, where do you get that replacement to begin with, let alone charge him?
Yeah, I mean, you either got to, either two things. You either got to make a break. Make a hole someplace else in the person.
I
or you got to go to...
Don't even want to think about it. But right now, I got to think about the news. And thanks for a great group of stories, and we'll talk to you soon.
Real quick. Okay. Strawberry Roan and we're in a master calls
call back and tell John, because I'm going right to the news right now on WGN Radio.
What do you do in the evening when you don't know what to do? Read a book, play a game. Every night it's just the same. What do you say if I tell you how to keep from feeling blue? My advice is good to stay, and it's easier to do when you're all alone any old night and you're feeling mighty blue. Pick up your hat, close up your flat, get out, get under the moon. Underneath the bright silvery light, you'll be feeling better soon. Pick up your hat, close up your flap, get out, get under the moon. Look, look, look at the stars above. Look, look, look at those sweeties, love. Oh boy, give me a night in June. all alone any old night and you're feeling out of tune. Pick up your hat, close up your flat, get out, get under the moon.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and yes, that's Leon Redbone. And 2014 on, Flying By label, and that was it was actually Steve Bryant who suggested that, because when we played a request, Doris Day's Put Him in a Box, you might remember that, he said, you know, I think it was inspired. Now, of course, Leon Redbone recorded it in 2014, but originally Paul Whiteman and Bing Crosby recorded it in 1928. And when I played the 1928 version, I said, you know, it does sound like whoever wrote that Doris Day record. It was an absolute rip. So here was the 1928 version.
When you're all alone any old night and you're feeling out of tune, pick up your hat, close up your flat, get out and get under the moon. Underneath the bright, silvery light, you'll be feeling better soon. Pick up your hat, close up your flat, get out and get under the moon.
Look, look, look at the stars above. Look, look, look at those sweeties of home. Give me a night in June.
All you gotta do, any old night, when you're feeling out of tune, pick up your hat, close up your flat, get out and get under the moon.
All right, so keep that in mind there. 1928 on Columbia when you hear 1948 and Doris Day.
You can take the moon, gather up the stars and the robins that sing merrily. Put them in a box, tie them with a ribbon, throw them in the deep blue sea. You can take the flowers down in Lover's Lane and that sentimental poetry. Put them in a box, tie them with a ribbon,
get throw out, get them under in the moon. Yes, indeed. So I rest my case, Your Honor. 888-876-5593. Eduardo in Tampa, welcome to WGN Radio.
Yeah, Raleigh, thank you for taking my call.
Always.
Everything so far so good on the Publix job.
Good.
So, yeah. A couple of stories here. I don't know if James talked about this. The lady in New Jersey went inside the tiger pen.
No.
To get real. Yeah, I saw this in the news, and it's Daily Mail, too. So she got really close.
I guess.
The designer, obviously, they have a city ordinance. Please do not go inside. And
well, right.
They got an APB out for her, if anybody knows this lady, because she's
to get a
full of ear.
Right, but the interesting thing is that she wasn't bitten by the 500-pound Bengal tiger. You know, that's the part.
Yeah, that was the good news, yeah.
What on earth is...
The bad news is she's in trouble with the law.
Well, yes, exactly, but I have a feeling that's not the only thing wrong with her. All right, so here she is. There's a video of her. You can see her wearing her dark top and white shorts, sticking her hand through the inner fencing as the tiger paces inches in front of her. Apparently there are two Bengal tigers, brothers who came as cubs, and the tiger in the video is Meshesha or something. In any event, apparently they could not explain. But I want to know, she climbs over the fence into the enclosure. What right. This must be a very well-fed tiger, because I can't imagine. Yeah, do not climb over the fence.
She's brave. Yeah.
Well, the other thing too is it's a fairly small fence. What do you mean, do not climb over the fence? It would seem that in this day and age it would be impossible to climb over the fence. So I didn't get a wide shot of the fence itself, but yes, this is a word for that. That word is insanity.
Yeah. Hey, I was listening, moving on, the midday host of KFI. I was like getting a different perspective when people coming out of town. Obviously, they're in for the big show this week. So who, I take it the radio station is the one that puts the bill for them staying at a hotel like the Omni's where they said they were staying at? I take it that's the radio station.
Well,
does
sure,
that,
sure. Now there's all sorts of possibilities. But are you telling me that KFI's midday show is at the DNC or something of that nature?
Yeah, they
all right.
They
all right.
They
yeah,
go in for
yeah,
that. Yeah, right, to do coverage on the
okay.
radio. Yeah,
right, right. It can be so many ways. I remember many years ago to torture me when I was at KOA. They had me go to all these events around Colorado, whether I wanted to or not. You know, God, I've seen every inch of Colorado. Anyway, bottom line was that sometimes it would be a trade out, like the venue that you'd be at would be willing to pick up the hotel because they wanted the advertising. You know, like if they're saying we're staying at the Omni might in
right.
fact be underwriting. It may not, you know, it could be either way. So sometimes it's that type of a trade. Sometimes it's not
okay.
a trade. The station foots the bill, but they're selling advertising. You know, they're going to clients and saying, you know, we're going to be live at this event. There'll be a lot of listeners. You might want to, you know, buy some ads at a premium. So it can be that.
Okay.
It can be that as well. There's an unlimited number of ways to fund it in terms of also the promotion budget, because if you think that it will add, you know, that much promotion to your radio station, you might want to pull it right out of the promotion budget and pay for it. So it could
yeah.
it could go in all those directions. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's ground zero for United Center's ground zero. I mean, everybody's, I mean...
Well, right,
the
United...
people overseas, yeah.
Yeah, of course, you know, the Sean Hannity's, the world, everybody
yeah.
else, of course. Well, United Center isn't going to pay for it, obviously. They have no reason to do that. But depending, again, the hotel you're staying in or something else you're advertising, that might be a write-off that way. Could be in a number of ways, but...
okay.
You know, who does middays on KFI anymore? I don't know.
Oh, that's well, they go by Gary and Shannon.
Gary and that's Shannon. True. Never heard of
yeah.
either of them.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So all right.
But,
is their show political?
No.
Okay.
Most of that is most of their shows during the day and in the evening are really non-political.
Okay.
Which
so,
is pretty good.
So they just went,
yeah.
they just went, as I'm looking them up now, Gary Hoffman and Shannon Farron. Okay.
Yeah, that's
and
their full
so
name, yeah.
Covering what you need to know and even some stuff you didn't. All right, fine, 9 to 1 weekdays, very well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's probably just, you know, a promotion because people obviously are talking about the DNC, much like they were about the RNC. So, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
It could have been, like I say, part of a trade-off, or it could have been that it's just the promotion budget.
Okay. Yeah, that's you always learn something new. That's good to hear for your perspective on that.
Yeah, well, you
yeah.
know, and there are, you know, like for years, Disney used to have a deal where they would bring in at their expense morning shows to broadcast from Disney World for a week. And they would
okay.
they would put you up very well and all that. And, you know, of course, you know my answer to that stuff. Are you out of your mind? But anyway, several people I know went and, you know, it was a pretty good deal. It was good for the radio stations and, you know, good for the talent who like that kind of thing.
Okay. All right. Maybe I'll come back tomorrow. I know
right.
tomorrow's Thursday. So have a good
very
evening.
Good.
Thank you for the time.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thanks. All right, so Adam and I were talking earlier. We're not 100% sure. We'll be on maybe right at 10 o'clock, but I believe that it's so funny. All these call letters just went through my mind before I got to WGN. That's what I'm on, WGN. I believe that WGN is carrying Kamala Harris's speech, and so consequently, if she's long-winded or if she starts late or whatever, then I'll be on after it. So I don't know if there's like a wrap-up after it or whatever, but otherwise it could be right at 10, but, you know, I hope you'll be listening either way. So 888-876-5593, 8888-Raleigh. Speaking of radio stations, I read an interesting story from State Farm Insurance, of all things, saying they're not responsible. All right, this is a court case now, and it involves a sports talk host in Philadelphia radio, and the sports talk host was given a Jeep Compass that was owned by a local dealership, and he had the car for a while, and obviously that's a promotion. You know, it says, here, drive a car and all that. Well, Unfortunately, there was an accident. And the host wasn't directly at fault, but it was a thing where someone ran into the host, and then the Jeep that the host was driving ran into somebody else. So that entity is suing. So now here's the deal. The host figures, well, I got car insurance. And his car insurer, who is State Farm, says, not so fast, bucko. You don't own this car. You have had it more than 31 days. This was not a temporary substitute car. And therefore, we're not responsible for liability coverage. All right, so now here's this guy. Will the dealership pick it up? I don't know. Because the question then comes, did the dealership's insurance cover him? But all that is to say, if you get a perk from work or anywhere else, you probably want to check the fine details. And in this case, it was a promotional agreement, and it was an informal perk, and the host didn't think anything of it. Oh, I'm driving their car. And meanwhile, yeah, here he is in the middle of a lawsuit. So I thought that was very interesting. You want to find out in all cases what your car insurance will pay for. And, of course, the only mandatory insurance is liability, and sadly, the minimums are so low that there is no mandatory insurance in the real world because they're just too low to even really replace a car. But nonetheless, assuming that you have coverage from somebody, especially if you've got coverage that's really affordable, you may want to look at the fine print when you're in a car that isn't yours. Yeah. So when does a loss of insurance apply? Well, obviously, in this guy's case, after 31 days. Interesting. So 888-876-5593 is 888-ROLLYE. And if you want the last word, this is the time to get it on WGN Radio.
You know I've always felt that everybody needs somebody to love. Do you know late at night when them raindrops begin to fall out from your windowsill? That's the time you need someone to hold real tight. Someone to whisper sweet things in your ear. Someone to tell you, honey, everything's all right.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James Wilson Piggott, and that, of course, was a request. And interestingly, that was not the first time he sung it. Yeah, I Found a Love 1967 on Atlantic. It was Brian and Joliet who wanted to hear it. Well, in 1962, 5 years earlier, on Lupine, after he joined the Falcons, they put it out the first time. WGN Radio. And there it is. That's the Falcons version of I Found the Love. And then 5 years later, Wilson Pickett on Atlantic took it upon himself to record it again. So that's the deal for Brian and Joliet. Tomorrow night, we think we'll be on at 10, but it depends how long the Democratic presidential nominee is going to speak. And we'll be on after Kamala Harris is off. And that's how that works. And so other than that, I'll have your requests and like that. And let's see what else I wanted to tell you. There's probably several things in the waning moment here, literally. But I'm not sure. Of course, we're still in Mercury retrograde. And I do find it interesting. Told you before, there are literally dozens and dozens of podcasts about, oh, this week it's all going to fall apart. You've got all these astrological aspects and, oh, the worst is going to happen. And, you know, it's everything from solar flares to earthquakes to, you know, volcanoes to unrest at the DNC. And there was some unrest at the DNC, but not a remarkable amount, to say the least. It isn't like anybody called in the National Guard. So I guess we have one day left of that. But so far, the grodiest thing I heard was whoever brought the vermin into the hotel, leaving it on the tables for the breakfast people to find. But bad as it is, that's not cataclysmic like the earth will end if you don't pay attention. Well, what can I tell you? Now, what's interesting is that already most of these soothsayers and astrologers have come back with new podcasts. And, you know, they don't mention that, well, you know, nothing really happened. And I realize I may be speaking prematurely. The week isn't over. But it seems like they've ignored it entirely. And now one who was particularly vocal about this is predicting Mars and its reaction from August 28th through October something. But it was just like, wait a minute, what happened this week? So I guess we'll find out. But the beauty of it is that if you're having trouble sleeping and you want something that'll lull you to sleep, YouTube is perfect for this because you can find something that will be interesting enough that your mind doesn't completely wander back to whatever was keeping you up, yet boring enough that you won't get so hooked you won't want to go to sleep. Somewhere is the sweet spot in the middle, and it works for me every night. All right, so with that in mind, that's a wrap until tomorrow night. We thank Adam for keeping us on the air and John for screening your calls. But above all, I thank you for calling. It makes it easier for me to do, and God knows I like easy. So do it again tomorrow night right here on WGN Radio.